77 WABC. The following program is brought to you by NYU Winthrop Hospital. It's the weekend. Be good to yourself. It's Katz's Corner with Dr. Aaron Katz, where you get simple, straightforward answers to your questions about health, from diet and supplements to lifestyle changes. To reach Dr. Katz, call 800-848-WABC. Now, live on 77 WABC, it's the chairman of urology at NYU Winthrop Hospital in New York. Here is Dr. Aaron Katz.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Katz's Corner here on WABC Radio in New York. I'm your host, Dr. Aaron Katz, and we're live at 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222 if you'd like to give me a call this morning. I'd love to hear from you. Hope all is doing well. It's a rare event that I'm actually on call at the hospital, but this is my turn, so I've had a wonderful opportunity to go to the hospital this weekend, and what I've noticed is that, first of all, I want to give a big shout-out. I don't know if that's still okay to say shout-out. Well, let me just say that I want to give my sincere gratitude to the wonderful PAs at NYU Winthrop University Hospital, because, you know, I made rounds yesterday morning, and it's just wonderful to see the dedicated team and service that we have in the urology department and throughout NYU Winthrop Hospital. Terrific. And so it really was wonderful to see that, and the dedicated team and staff, and every patient that I rounded on really had the same thing to say, which is that they're so thankful for the care. The other thing that I noticed is that a lot of the patients were being admitted for flank pain, for kidney stones. One in particular came in, a woman came in with blocked kidneys and probably will need some stenting today. And another elderly gentleman in his early 80s, I may need to also put up a kidney stent because of a several stones within the kidneys and down into the ureter, and extraordinary amount of pain, requiring a lot of pain medication. And the kidneys are blocked, and I need to go in and unblock the kidneys. And I just want to encourage everyone. I guess my point is that I think at this time of year, when the weather is changing, we definitely need to make sure, if you are predisposed to kidney stones, have kidney stones in your family, or have had a kidney stone in the past, that you are adequately hydrating yourself as the weather becomes warmer. If you're outside doing some physical activity, the urine becomes concentrated, and you are much more likely to develop stones. So make sure that you are drinking lots of water this time. And again, we are, well, it's amazing, but we are almost here for the Men's Health Seminar. It will be next Saturday. Next Saturday, it is not too late to sign up. If you haven't signed up yet, if you've been thinking about it, now is the time. It's very easy to go to menshealthseminar.com. We'd love to see you there. It's going to be a terrific event. My colleagues will be there, Dr. Jonathan Haas and Dr. Anthony Corcoran and Dr. Jeffrey Schiff, as well as so many of the other colleagues at NYU Hospital, who will be discussing various aspects of men's health, including not only prostate issues, sexual issues, urinary issues, but a whole gamut of men's health. So we hope to see you there, including colon health, sleep health. We have, and of course, our keynote speaker is Dr. Michael Roizen, who is the chief wellness officer at the Cleveland Clinic, and he'll be here to discuss the latest and greatest for men's health, not only for men, but for everyone. So hope to see you there. It's easy to sign up, menshealthseminar.com. The phone lines are opened if you want to give me a call. The number again is 1-800-848-9222. That number again is 1-800-848-9222. 888-WABC. I want to, last week there was a number of people that called in, and I wasn't able to get to all of them, so certainly give me a call this morning. I was talking last week about the American Urological Association that I attended, which was in San Francisco. I was very proud of our research team at NYU Winthrop. We had excellent presentations this year on our research looking at the use of focal therapy for prostate cancer. And my colleagues down at NYU downtown in Manhattan are also using focal therapy these days for treating prostate cancer, whether it be the use of laser therapy or something called HIFU, which is ultrasound-based therapy, or something that I particularly have been in favor of called cryotherapy. The outcomes all seem to be quite good. The quality of life seems to be excellent, really excellent. And for those patients, again, and it's not for everyone, but for those patients that are diagnosed and found to have early-stage prostate cancer and it's only on one side of the prostate or on one region of the prostate, this seems to be an excellent modality for many patients. And it can be used as an outpatient procedure. And in fact, minimal anesthesia, most of the patients, well, all the patients actually are done in an ambulatory setting, which means that you come in, have the procedure, and go home. So there's no prolonged hospital stay. Now, certainly those patients and you know, some of the patients that get diagnosed with prostate cancer have disease that are on both sides of the prostate. And in fact, we are seeing, because some of the physicians out there are not getting the regular PSA tests as we recommend, every year at least, some of the patients are now coming in with much higher PSAs, much higher cancer volume, and are not going to be candidates for focal therapy and will require whole gland treatment. And that can be done with either at NYU Winthrop, we have all the modalities, but certainly we are a center for both robotic surgery, and we have some three excellent robotic surgeons at the hospital, Dr. Corcoran, Dr. Jamal, Dr. Gershbaum, who really are excellent at doing these procedures. But yes, that does require a hospitalization. But, you know, I looked at our length of stay, actually, this past week, and we did nearly 200 robotics over the past year. And the length of stay is, I think it was 1.2 days or something. So some of the patients, the majority of the patients are just staying overnight, just one night, and can go home the next morning. So that's really been a major advance in our field of urology. And I look around the hospital and I see that the robot is being used now for so many different types of procedures, both in GYN oncology, for hysterectomies, for, you know, for the surgeons are using it for pancreatic cancer. You know, we have outstanding, Dr. John Allendorf at NYU Winthrop is an outstanding pancreatic surgeon. We have Dr. Colin Brathwaite, who is our chief of chairman of surgery, who does a lot of bariatric surgery there, using the robot. And we also have some excellent physicians that are doing cardiac and lung surgery with robotics. So the robotics has really made a big difference. I often wonder if future residents are going to know even how to do open surgery, because that seems to be gone. I mean, you know, the days of at least for in actually in this past week, we had an excellent speaker talking from Roswell Park, who came in and gave us a lecture on the use of robotic surgery to remove bladders. And I know my colleague, Dr. Corcoran, Anthony Corcoran, who's doing an excellent job, really terrific surgeon, in removing bladders robotically and creating a new bladder with the use of a robot with your, it's amazing that you can, you know, if you have invasive bladder cancer, that you can now have a new bladder made. It's not really a bladder transplant. It's actually using your own intestinal, part of your intestines. You know, sometimes we use the small intestine, sometimes we use the large intestine to make a new bladder. In fact, yesterday I was on rounds at the hospital, and Dr. Corcoran had done this on a patient on Friday, and I had seen him yesterday morning at 8 o'clock. The man was you know, sitting up in a chair. He's looks terrific, and hopefully he'll be leaving the hospital in a couple of days. Now, those patients do require a few more days of hospitalization because you're going to now recreate a new bladder, and you're going to need to make sure that everything is healed up on the inside, because you're taking a small piece of your, in this particular gentleman's case, a small bowel, and called the ileum, and making a neo or a new bladder. And he'll be able to urinate on his own and function normally, which is really a tremendous advance. You know, in the days when I was training, if you had to remove someone's bladder, you would have to have a bag. It's called a conduit, an ileal conduit, and a stoma on your side, and urine would drain out on a bag on your side for the rest of your life. But if you can remove someone's bladder and have them urinate normally with no external appliance, and everything is done on the inside, well, wow, that's really incredible. So great job there. So, yes, we had this doctor come and talk to us about robotic surgery. But, you know, so it's there's really tremendous advances in urology, and the entire field of oncology is changing so dramatically, you know, with all of the immune therapies. And we have all of these available, too, as well as NYU Winthrop. At NYU Winthrop, we have outstanding medical oncologists that are experts in melanoma, in lung cancer, advanced lung cancer, where now the immune checkpoint inhibitors, as they're known, this new form of immune therapy, which kind of tricks the immune, well, enhances really your own immune system to fight cancer, and allows our immune system to recognize these cancer cells as foreign and allows us to attack them. You know, one of the things that cancer cells do is they're very tricky, and they put up these little flags on them so that we don't recognize them as foreign. But with these immune checkpoint inhibitors, we can now enhance the immune system. And it's really been, I think, revolutionary. And then the other form of immune therapy that we've seen is something called CAR T, where you actually take out your body's T cells and charge them up and then reinfuse them back into you, so they are cancer fighting cells. So there's so much hope these days. And yes, the drugs are hugely expensive. There's no doubt about that. You know, the latest ones are in, you know, the multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars. And we need to do a better job at seeing how we can reduce the cost. I was just reading yesterday about articles about, you know, patients' families who have to sometimes, you know, have this huge burden of cost where, you know, sometimes the insurance carriers are not paying for it. And you have a loved one in your family who needs this therapy because they've already had a relapsed cancer, and you have to you have to take the cost on yourself. It's extraordinarily expensive, and it can be a huge burden to someone's family. But hopefully, government will somehow step in and regulate the cost of the pharma a bit more. The phone lines are open, 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. If you just tuning in this morning to Cancer's Corner, and this Saturday, look forward to seeing everyone at the Men's Health Seminar. Should be a wonderful event. I started talking this morning about our research that was presented at the AUA. We also had a lot of research that we presented, and there was many papers, again, on the use of specific new biomarkers, which we will be talking about at the seminar, for the detection of prostate cancer using tests like the 4K score, the PCA3 genome test, the genetic test, and the genomic markers. And I was actually able to obtain the data from the country on the use of genomics. 29,000 men who had these genomic tests that were available. These are tests that once you have a biopsy, to determine whether or not the biopsy is more or less aggressive than what we can see under the microscope, we can then send the biopsy material and have it analyzed and look at the actual genes. And this is a test that I've been using and have now been very much in favor of to determine whether or not someone should go on what we call active surveillance or active treatment. And it's a test that analyzes 17 genes within a very small amount of DNA from the individual cancer cell. So you're basically taking out the DNA from the cancer cell, looking at 17 genes and seeing and coming up with a new panel, let's say a new score, what we call a genomic score or a GPS, a genomic prostate score. So it's above and beyond the standard Gleason score to really give us some predictive ability to whether or not the patient harbors a disease that warrants treatment or can go on active surveillance. And, you know, we have over 500 patients right now in our database at NYU Winthrop. And the majority of the patients, so the need for treatment at 5 years is somewhere under 20%, which means that over 80% of the patients, at least for the first 5 years that we analyze and that we feel are good candidates for surveillance, will not require treatment, whether that be surgery or focal therapy or CyberKnife. So it really does require a thorough look at the individual and a thorough consultation. Okay, we can go to the phone lines now at 1-800-848-9222. See, people are starting to wake up here on Katz's Corner on this. Well, it's going to be a little drizzly Sunday here. Okay, Maurice in New Jersey is up first. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Dr. Katz. You're the best.
Oh, you're sweet. Oh, you're sweetheart.
I used to live in Long Island, but now I live in New Jersey for about 18 years. I had a green light laser procedure done about 8 months ago. And my urologist kept me on Proscar, and he says, keep taking it. So, you know, if I don't want tissue to grow back, I'm not sure that I'd like to stay on it all that time. I'm 80 years old.
So you had the green light already?
Yes, and I'm doing fine. I'm doing wonderful.
So why would you need to be on the medication?
What?
Why do you need to be on the medication?
I don't know. You just
I don't know either.
Tissue coming back. I mean,
tissue coming back. Well, I mean, yeah. If tissue comes back, then you know the nice thing about the green light laser, Maurice, is that you know it's an outpatient procedure, as you well know.
And overnight, and that was it. Yeah.
You stayed overnight?
Yeah.
Now, most of our patients don't. When did you have it done?
Oh, I would say last October.
Okay. Well, most of the patients that we do really are just outpatient procedure, but that's fine to stay overnight. Maybe there was some issues or whatever. But the fact is that if the green light was done adequately, which is the laser, so a laser is put in the middle of the urethra where the prostate is, and then it kind of vaporizes the tissue and opens up the channel. I would say this patient satisfaction is quite high. You were happy with the procedure?
Oh, very happy.
Good.
Extremely happy.
I'm glad to hear that.
I mean, it wasn't that long a rehab. It was fine. And I responded as far as urination, fine. You know, I don't have any problems right now. Other than maybe some sexual problem, that's what's bothering me a lot.
Well, you're in your 80s, right? You're 80.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, if you look at the... I don't believe that the green light laser is the cause of sexual problems. It can cause retrograde ejaculation, but it typically doesn't cause problems with men getting an erection because it's just kind of like lasering out the inside of the apple core where the tissue has grown inside. So the nerve bundles for erections, which are on the, let's say, on the outside of the apple, the laser doesn't affect that.
I'm thinking it's the medication.
Well, yes. Now, the medication can do it. Yes,
yeah.
The medication can do it. I don't see most of the patients that I do the green light on within a week are off the medication, and you stay off the medication.
Yes.
The goal of the procedure is to get you off the medication. So if you've done well,
yes,
you know, can it grow back in the future? I mean, you're 80
not
now.
Could it grow?
you worry about it when you're 95 years old.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If you're doing well, Maurice, I don't see the point of staying on the medication, which you're right, can have multiple side effects. And one of them
I've had that sexual situation since I've been on Proscar, and it's quite a while now. You know, it's at least 5-6 years. Maybe
okay.
More.
So drop it.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell your urologist you spoke to Katz, and that he's really concerned about why you need to still be on the medication.
Okay.
And, you know, it's possible that it was just an oversight and kept renewing it. But to think that, well, maybe in the future it'll grow back, I think it's time to get off of it, okay?
Get off of it. Thank you so much.
Drop it.
Katz.
Delete it.
Okay, appreciate it.
Yeah, sure thing.
Okay, have a wonderful day.
Thank you, you too. You know, the fact is, if the tissue were to grow back, I mean, yes, you could have another laser. That's possible. There are some new techniques that we're now using at NYU Winthrop called the UroLift, which you could have, which is an office-based procedure. In fact, my colleague, Dr. Schiff, is one of the real pioneers of doing this in the office and has done close to 200 right now. And the overall patient satisfaction there is quite high. So, yeah, I think the idea here for a lot of these procedures, the hope is that you can get off the medications, which can have a lot of different side effects. Okay, let's go back to the lines. My friend, someone is calling Stu in, I don't know this area, Goshen, Connecticut? Where is that?
Yeah, Litchfield, Connecticut.
Oh, Litchfield, beautiful area. Okay, good morning, Stu. How are you doing?
Hi. Okay, thank you. I have a question.
Okay.
I had surgery. I had a Gleason score of 9. I had the prostate removed. And now there's a question of whether or not I might need radiation. And I had a genomic testing done, and they came back with a very low possibility of future metastases over 5 to 10 years. And the question is that a situation where you would not do radiation or just watch for waiting? What's the protocol after the genomic testing post-surgery?
Okay, so you've had the prostate removed, and how long ago was that?
6 months.
And it was a Gleason 9?
Yeah, and since then the PSA has been negligible.
Okay, well, that's great. And, you know, a Gleason 9 prostate cancer is, you know, it's certainly an aggressive situation. Was the PSA very high at the time of diagnosis?
Yes, it was about 12 at that point.
Okay, but not high, but not horribly high. And it's not like it was, you know, 70 or 80 or 100.
Oh, no, nothing like that. Right.
Okay, and I assume that at the time the doctors took out the lymph nodes as well?
There was no lymph node involvement, so I'm not really certain. I've read the pathology report.
Good. So is the pathology report
that needed to be done?
Well, the pathology report showed no lymph node involvement, right?
Correct.
Okay, so the lymph nodes were removed, and they were not involved. Great news.
Right. Okay.
So the only other question, Stu, and this is, you know, a situation where clearly, you know, and was it done robotically?
Yes.
Okay, so it sounds like the guy did a terrific job, I must say, because, you know, Gleason 9s are not that easy to get a PSA undetectable. Sounds like 6 months later, your PSA is 0. The only other question I would want to know is whether or not the margins were clear.
They were.
I don't see the point of having radiation then. You know, obviously, you know, you're giving me, you know, maybe I'm missing something or I don't have all of your
medical
records.
I've read quite a bit about this, and I was made a point of getting the lab results myself to review. And
I'm sorry too, but you know, I mean, I'm happy to say that I think, you know, if your margins were clear, your lymph nodes were clear, there was nothing within the what's called the seminal vesicles. I assume those were clear.
Yes. Yes.
Well, you are.
The remarkable thing about this is I had 2 biopsies.
Yeah.
Prior to,
and they missed it.
That's right. And then I think it's called a focal biopsy.
A fusion biopsy.
Fusion biopsy. And that was remarkable. I mean,
wow.
It was clear as day. That's after 2 missed shots. But I guess that happens.
It does happen. It happens a lot. And, you know, thankfully now we have this technology where we can take what's called the ultrasound and fuse it with the MRI. So you've had an MRI. And then you fuse it with the ultrasound, and you can really target exactly where the lesion is. And for patients like you that have had prior negative biopsies and the PSA is still going up, that's a fusion biopsy. And so you've had a Gleason 9, and you've had your prostate out, and how are you doing, by the way?
Well, I'm doing pretty well. I still have, you know, certain side effects, but that seems to be improving. I have my strength and energy. I'm very grateful for, you know, the care I've gotten, but it's still going to take some time to resolve the incontinence issue. That seems to be the
okay. Well, are you still wearing pads?
Yes.
Okay. Are you doing Kegel exercises?
Yes, not as much as I should.
Okay, do more Kegel exercises. And you know, if it's that bothersome, you can talk to him about some type of rehabilitation therapy, like some pelvic therapy, which can be very helpful. Okay, pelvic floor physical therapy. Speak to your doctor about that.
Yeah, your point's well taken. A very close friend of mine had surgery just before me. Same issues. They've just directed him to do that.
Okay, wonderful.
Sounds right on.
So, Stu, my feeling is this. You had a Gleason 9. It's an aggressive cancer. Your margins, your nodes, everything was clear. I would, probably every 2 to 3 months, I would get a hypersensitive PSA, which is not the standard PSA. It's like the PSA that can go to the 100th place. Okay?
Wow.
So write that down, an ultra-sensitive or hypersensitive PSA, to make sure that any little blip up in the PSA could be concerning and could be an early warning sign, and then I would consider radiation. At this point in time, if you're telling me your PSA is 0.00, with everything being clear, I think your surgeon did an excellent job. You should be congratulated, and I think with pelvic physical therapy, you'll be okay. And you haven't gained weight, have you?
No, as a matter of fact, I've lost a little weight.
Okay, yeah, because the only reason I say gained weight is if you have a lot of weight there, it can put pressure on the sphincter muscle and also continue to not allow you to dry up as quickly.
I see, yeah. I think everything you've said is exactly what's been transpiring. I just didn't know if PSA rises a little bit with the genomic testing saying my chances were so low. If, in fact, I did need...
Adjuvant radiation, which means, you know, that the PSA is zero, but we want to give you radiation. And those patients, and certainly, by the way, I wouldn't do it now, the radiation, especially now because you're having some urinary incontinence, which can make the radiation can not only make it, it could potentially make it worse, but it could potentially significantly delay the time that you become a continent of urine. But I'm not hearing, I mean, certainly if you told me that all the margins were positive or your PSA was rising, then you would have to do it, Stu. But at this point, sit tight, so to speak. Okay, that's a tight,
yes,
means the
no
Kegel tight. Okay, tighten the butt muscles, all right? Sit tight. You're doing fine. And, you know, call me back in a few months and let me know how you're doing, okay? But it sounds
you're doing
great. And it sounds like you made the right decision there to have the robotics. Yes, sir.
Doctor, I just want to say I can't tell you how helpful your show is, how educational it is.
Thank you.
I've been listening to it for years, for a year or two even before. And thank God for this new fusion procedure, which is really much better.
Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful, Stu. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, that's nice. He's done rather well. And not saying that, you know, we don't know if he had, you know, just radiation instead of surgery. But the thing is that there are a lot of patients that do have surgery. And at the time of surgery are found to have, I didn't ask him, I should have asked him, what was his biopsy before surgery? Because sometimes patients will have a Gleason 7 or an 8, and then at the time of surgery, when the whole prostate, I mean, one of the advantages of, you know, if you have a lot of disease is getting it out and you have the pathology report, and then you can make decisions about whether or not you need additional treatment or not. And yeah, many of the patients with Gleason 9, yeah, they do need additional treatment. They do. They do need combination treatment. But in his particular case, well, you know, kudos to his urologist up there. Well, we just have a couple of minutes left, and in that time, I wanted to talk. I guess I'll do it next week. But I'm not a big fan of medication all the time, but there has been a new medication that has recently been FDA approved. If you're getting up at night, if you're having at least two or three episodes at night. There's a new FDA-approved medication for this called Noctiva. So you might want to check it out on the internet. Of course, I always go conservative with my patients. Fluid restriction after dinner. Don't drink so much coffee or teas or sodas or water after dinner. That can certainly help your getting up at night. We'll talk about all of this next Saturday. It's unbelievable. It's here. I've been talking about this for several months, but the Men's Health Seminar at the Garden City Hotel this coming Saturday. So I hope to see you all there. You can sign up at menshealthseminar.com. I got to go to the hospital now and make rounds with our wonderful PA service. So I'll see you guys later and every Sunday here at 7 a.m. on WABC Radio in New York. This is Dr. Aaron Katz.
WABC New York.